The following presentation is brought to you by the Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to editorial cartoonist Daryl Cagle. You've no doubt seen his political cartoons in newspapers across the country, liberally shared on Facebook, and at his website, darylcagle.com. Stick around. And if you're not looking for a vitamin-packed conversation about stuff Mom told you not to discuss in mixed company, too bad. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you prefer to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of real-life Americans who think that deep down, you're thinking what they're thinking. In the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Don't tell Daryl Cagle, but the real reason I wanted to see the internationally syndicated editorial cartoonist as a guest on Mr. Media was to match up his actual face with his caricature. He couldn't possibly look that harried, frustrated, and aggravated all at the same time, could he? Well, now, it can't be easy doing what guys like Cagle do for a living. Every day they sit down at their drawing table with the expectation of reacting to whatever is most provocative in the day's breaking news. These men and women don't know what they'll be commenting on, referencing, or satirizing from one day to the next. They only know the material comes from a never-ending font of man's inhumanity to his fellow man. To put the job in perspective, a daily cartoonist working on comic strips such as Blondie or Mutts or Pearls Before Swine typically works 4 to 6 weeks ahead of deadline. An editorial cartoonist must come up with fresh, zingy content today for tomorrow. Now, Cagle's company, Cagle Cartoons Newspaper Syndicate, distributes the cartoons of 60 editorial cartoonists and 14 columnists to more than 850 subscribing newspapers in the United States and around the world, including more than half of America's daily paid circulation newspapers. He is now our most widely syndicated editorial cartoonist. He is also a past president of the National Cartoonist Society and the National Cartoonist Society Foundation. Now, if you love editorial cartoons, Daryl Cagle would love to see you put your money where your eyeballs are. He's raising cash to help sustain his site, Cagle.com, and that's Cagle.com. You can become a supporter for as little as $1 a month by making a pledge at Cagle.com/heroes. By the way, something you may not know about Cagle. He spent 15 years working with Jim Henson's Muppets, where he helped create the Muppet Baby characters. Muppet Babies characters. Really? Daryl Cagle, welcome to Mr. Media.
Pleasure to talk to you, Bob.
Good to have you here. Is there ever a dull day in your business?
Well, I run a business, so I have to do the bookkeeping and the business stuff, and that takes too much of my time, so I'm afraid I have too many dull days.
So the business side is dull, but in terms of creating content when you've got your creative hat on. There's never a dull moment in that, is there?
I think I've got the best job in the world. I get to draw what I want, when I want, and say whatever I want, and I don't have an editor that I have to kowtow to. And I did in the past. You know, editors sometimes ask you to do things you don't want to do, and now I'm editor free.
What's the downside of that, though?
I like not having an editor. I don't see a downside to that. It'd be nice if I was working in a cubicle at a newspaper and all I had to do was think about drawing my cartoon and not have to do the business stuff and the other stuff that comes with it. But it's the business stuff and the other stuff that gives me my freedom, puts me in this kind of unique position for editorial cartoonists. So I'm happy with it.
But having an editor, somebody who also comes from a newspaper background, the idea of having the editor sometimes is good because you have someone to bounce things against. Sometimes when you're maybe running a little dry, somebody who's looking for ideas for you. I understand the downside, though, of somebody telling you what to do and what not to do, and we want you to say this about this. That would be the downside. But you know, sometimes having that extra person, not such a bad thing.
I think it'd be kind of fun to work in a newsroom and have all the excitement of people around you. And I've always worked at home, and I have never had that. So, yeah, I get that. But, you know, once you have people telling you what to do, I think most of those guys that sit in the cubicles wish they could work at home.
Well, from one guy who works at home to another, yeah, I hear you. I like having people around. I also like not having to report to anyone, so I understand. Tell me about a day. I mean, is your goal to turn out one cartoon a day, or do you ever turn out more than one? Do you ever wish, I wish I had an outlet for more than one, or do you have an outlet for more than one a day?
I don't have any deadlines, really. I don't have a newspaper that has a hole that's waiting for my cartoon each day with a deadline. I can draw what I want when I want. And, you know, I kind of made this business by standing on the shoulders of my colleagues. So I have a package of cartoons, a whole bunch of cartoonists that go out as a group. And I'm mindful of what the other guys are drawing. You know, cartoonists are like a pack of wolves. They chase the story of the day. You got to draw what they're talking about on Fox or CNN because that's what the editors want to see. So you see a lot of duplicity in cartoons, a lot of what we call Yahtzees, everybody drawing the same thing at the same time. And I'm aware of that. And you know, since I'm kind of watching the group, I don't often follow something that I know everybody else is going to draw a cartoon on at the same time because that cartoon isn't needed in the package. So I can go off in my own direction a little bit, and I can avoid drawing those topics that I hate to draw that I had to draw when I had a boss in a hole and had to fill a cartoon every day in the paper. So I don't have to draw about the weather. I don't have to draw about the celebrity who just died. I hate drawing about crime because everybody knows crime is bad. You don't have any useful thing to say about crime. So this girl in Aruba, and we've been watching her on the news for 8 weeks, and who killed her and all that stuff. I don't want to have to deal with that. So I don't have to. I can draw when I want to. I also have these little gaps that you'll notice in my schedule when I have to do the business stuff. So it works. I used to feel disappointed that I didn't get a lot of people complaining when I took a few days off for business stuff. They don't notice because it's a package. Editorial cartoons kind of are fungible, like wheat. You know, you can buy wheat from one vendor, wheat for another vendor. It's just wheat. Editorial page editors tend to look at cartoonists that way. And people tend not to know the names of cartoonists, editorial cartoonists. They notice the quality of the cartoons. They might see something that they recognize, but you can't ask somebody name an editorial cartoonist and get a name. We tend to be anonymous and fungible.
So it's interesting. So in my introduction, I described basically someone who I guess I think of as maybe as a staff editorial cartoonist who does have that daily deadline and to do. Are all of the cartoonists that your syndicate represents, are they do they operate differently? Are some of them working for daily newspapers, or are they all working?
You can see the cartoonists we represent in our newspaper package site, where newspapers get the cartoons like a real-time news ticker. The cartoonist uploads them when he finishes them, and newspaper can download them there. It's kegelcartoons.com. And we've got a list of the cartoonists, American cartoonists on the left and the world cartoonists on the right. You can see their attributions. More and more of them are freelancers now as jobs are disappearing. And I'm afraid that in the future, it's going to be that way for just about all of journalism. You see the journalists losing their jobs and working as freelancers and cobbling together a living from multiple sources. And, you know, the nature of the beast. I don't think editorial cartoonists are different from other journalists in that respect. And, you know, you hear all this news about jobs disappearing in editorial cartooning. I don't think that's a distinction either, because we've lost jobs at just about the same rate as newsroom jobs. And there weren't that many cartoonists to begin with. It's always been people seeing cartoons in syndication for the most part. Just the way it's evolving.
The newspapers used to see their editorial cartoonist as someone who sets them apart, someone who helps identify the tone of the editorial page, someone that gives them a unique identity. That was the old view. I think the new view is they're a budget line item that, you know what, how many people are going to notice if they're not there?
Well, there are about 1,400 daily newspapers in America, and there are about 50 cartoonists that have jobs at newspapers. And probably 30 years ago, there were probably 100 cartoonists. So not a big percentage change, I think. Most newspapers never had a cartoonist before, don't have a cartoonist now, and that change of 50 cartoonists isn't really reflective of much of anything. I think the attitude's about the same as it's always been.
How many have disappeared from? It just seems like it's been so many more. I mean, for example, I'm in the Tampa Bay area. What was the St. Pete Times, now the Tampa Bay Times.
Yeah, Dwayne Stasekel and Paul Combs.
Right,
and
we
had
Tampa
Clay
Tribune.
Bennett for a while.
We had Clay Bennett and Don Addis both mm-hmm. doing, and then and now you know Bennett's gone, Addis has passed. Stasekel is retired. Paul Combs, I don't know.
Paul Combs is still drawing for syndication.
Okay.
Clay Bennett's drawing in Chattanooga.
But I mean, you know, the Times had always had put great value on having editorial cartoonists. Doesn't anymore. The Trib, same thing. They don't have. I don't believe either one of them has a you know person on staff anymore. I kind of had the sense that there were more than 50 jobs that have been lost in recent years, but. I mean, if you're telling me it's only 50, it's 50%, but it's fewer than I guess I would have guessed.
Well, people don't have good numbers on this stuff, but I think those are generally accepted estimates. Maybe there were 200 in 1950. Still, there were more daily papers then. I don't think the percentage has changed much. You know, when you look around the world, editorial cartoonists are valued much more highly than they are in America. The problem we have with editors here is that they want editorial cartoons to be little jokes. Like Jay Leno tells a joke and you don't know what Jay Leno's really thinking. All you know is that it's about some topic in the news and it's kind of funny, but who knows what Jay Leno's opinion is. That's what they want from editorial cartoonists. A little trivial joke to put a smile on your face that nobody could disagree with. And that differs from the rest of the world, where editorial cartoonists are very important and they do things that are very provocative. And they think of American cartoonists as kind of tame and prudish. And it's true. The editorial page editors push us in that direction. And, you know, they have so many cartoons to pick from every day in syndication. They can always pick the tamer cartoons, even though they have a choice of more provocative cartoons. That's what they do, and it's frustrating.
Well, okay, so let's go in that direction for a second. International cartoonists, the issues are very different too. A lot of them are, I mean, you know, we like to think we have this freedom in the United States. A lot of the editorial cartoonists around the world are fighting for that freedom, and they have to walk a very scary line, don't they? I mean,
you know, it really differs in different parts of the world. I think the areas of the world where editorial cartoonists are most important are the Romance language countries, the Arabic language countries, Turkey and Iran. You go to Cairo and they'll have 20 newspapers and most of them will have color editorial cartoons on the front page. The ones that don't, they've got them big inside and it's the cartoonist is still the main loudest voice in the paper. It's important to them, culturally important to them. And newspapers are more culturally important to them. It's still seen as learned and gentlemanly to sit down and read the newspaper there. So, you know, when we see riots about Muhammad cartoons and, you know, cartoonists murdered and everyone turns out in France, to a typical American, I think they think how ridiculous this is that people would get so upset and have such passion about something so trivial as a cartoon. They're just not getting it, because around the world, the cartoons are not trivial. These are the important voices, the clear voices, the thing you cut out and put on the fridge rather than cutting out a column and putting it on the fridge. That's lost here, and I hate that.
Well, I mean, there a case just in the last couple of weeks in Turkey of a editorial cartoonist who the president of Turkey found offensive and is either jailed or is pending charges against?
Yeah, I think the charges were dropped, but, you know, there's a series of the president of Turkey suing cartoonists and getting criminal proceedings against cartoonists, and that's a problem around the world. Again, you see in the Arabic language countries, there's this what we call a barometer of freedom for cartoonists. Can a cartoonist draw the president of his own country? It's a great barometer of freedom. You've never seen anybody in any cartoonist in Cuba draw Castro. They can't draw the president of China from China. We have cartoonist in Singapore who says, "Oh, Daryl, I can draw whatever I want as long as it's not about Singapore." It's a barometer of freedom. Now, in the Arab countries, they want to speak truth to power, and they push up against these barriers. You know, they've never allowed to draw Mubarak in Egypt. There never was a Mubarak cartoon. So cartoonists get beaten up. They get their hands broken. They get thrown in jail. They're always pushing against those limits. It's great. They've got a good attitude about it. Contrast that with China, where they don't care to speak truth to power. We've got a cartoonist that I syndicate from China, draws for the China Daily, the national English language paper in China. And I ask him, "Well, why don't you ever draw the president of China? Why don't you draw anything about issues in China?" And he says, "Daryl, it's different. I'm like a cheerleader, and China is my team." And that's, you know, it's very culturally different from culture to culture. The same constraints that drive the Arab cartoonists crazy don't exist in Asia. You know, you go to Japan, I challenge you to try and find a editorial cartoonist in Japan. They read manga on the subways. You got a character in front of every store, but no editorial cartoons.
That's a cultural issue in Japan, isn't it? I mean,
it's a cultural issue everywhere.
Right, but I mean, Japan, they're very reticent to be critical of themselves, of each other, of their guests. It's a even different from China in that regard, I think. It's just the
I think that's true. They'd see editorial cartoons as rude. Mm-hmm. In China, I think well, there was a cartoonist there who drew the president and got fired. And that, I think, got around to all the other cartoonists and chilled them on the idea of pushing the limits. It's different, though, to be fired rather than to be beaten up, thrown in jail, have your hands broken. So there's a level of repression, but they all respond to the cartoonist being fired in China, whereas being beaten up and imprisoned in the Arab countries isn't quite enough to get them to stop pushing the limits. So again, it's all cultural.
Well, in China, it might be different today than even 10 years ago. Now that, I mean, the internet has broken through so much, even though it is highly censored and controlled, if the word gets out in China that so-and-so was fired for drawing the president of China or whatever the offense may be, that's really all it's going to take in that society because of the internet and the press. What press they do have, the word gets around very fast. They don't have to break the artist's fingers there, whereas in maybe the Middle East or some South American companies countries. They may still feel that they need to, you know, beat the crap out of the guy to get the message across to his counterparts.
Also, keep in mind that cartoons are much more important in the Arabic language countries than they are in China, where editorial cartoonists are few and far between. It's a matter of importance to society as well. We represent a package of top editorial cartoonists from around the world, and that is unusual in itself. Papers that don't carry our package, you never see it. Cartoonists from around the world. Even in our package, we have a hard time getting the editors to reprint the worldwide cartoonists. It's kind of a quest. I think it's good to have that available and have people see it here, but it's hard to convince the editors to do it because they're generally disinterested in that. I keep plugging away at it.
About a year before he died, I had Jerry Robinson, cartoonist Jerry Robinson, on the show. And most people who know anything about comics know him as a guy who was there at the birth of Batman, was the first artist on Batman. He created Robin. He doesn't get full credit with Bob Kane for co-creating the Batman series, but people who know that he did that. The reason I mention him is later in life, in the 60s and 70s and 80s, maybe even later, he got very involved with the international editorial cartooning community, and he was a big advocate for global cartoonists. I guess I'm assuming that you're familiar with him and his work in this. Has anyone come along who's kind of followed in his footsteps?
Well, his son still runs his business. It's still around. In fact, I took a class that Jerry offered at New School in New York when I was 21, probably, I don't want to say how many decades ago. Jerry was a great guy. I was very impressed with Jerry.
So that work continues with his son.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was just curious. And so let's bring our world tour full circle back to the United States. So there's 50 editorial cartoonists still with daily newspapers.
Yeah.
Are you able to break down what their political leanings are based on kind of general informed knowledge? And is there this sense, I think, in certain areas where that cartoonists tend to all lean one way or the other?
Well, everyone talks about how there are more liberal cartoonists than there are conservative ones, and that's true. And the conservative ones certainly get reprinted more than the liberal ones. I think that kind of originated in the fact that it was the larger papers that were willing to budget to have a staff cartoonist. The larger papers tended to be in large urban areas, which tended to be liberal. And the majority of papers are suburban and rural, and they're the ones that tended to be conservative. And so you naturally had more cartoonists who had jobs at big papers, and rare to find cartoonists who had jobs at small papers. So there was a structural reason for having more liberal than conservative cartoonists. That said, there's a bit less structural reason for that now, and I still see it holding true that there are more liberal than conservative cartoonists. That said, people are not seeing more liberal than conservative cartoons in the newspaper because the conservative cartoonists are reprinted more.
Interesting. Okay. Now, I'm in an area where we have the Tempe Times, which is generally largely known as a liberal paper supporting Democratic side of things, I guess, whereas the Tampa Tribune across the bay has always been conservative and kind of right-wing about things. And there was always a very clear delineation between the cartoons that a Clay Bennett or a Don Addis would do for the Times and Wayne Stascoe, who was far to the right. I always found a lot of his stuff just plain offensive because it was just I don't know. It was offensive. But when I go back and look at it, it's still funny. It's just I don't agree with it, but I still see where he's making fun. And is it hard for individuals, do you think, to look at both sides from editorial cartoons, or do they just want the cartoons that agree with their point of view?
Oh, there's a lot of preaching to the choir going on. I think particularly with the conservative editors – it's the liberal editor that'll print the column left, column right, cartoon left, cartoon right. Conservative editors tend to not want to do that, and they want to just run conservative cartoons. One thing that we tried doing on our cartoons.com site, the newspaper site, is we've started putting little red and blue buttons next to cartoons to label them liberal and conservative, because we found that many conservative editors would have their blinders on. They would get it in their head that this cartoonist is conservative and this cartoonist is liberal based on looking at a couple of cartoons. And then they would never look at the liberal cartoonist again. They would only look at two, three cartoonists that they identified as conservative. And, you know, I want to break them out of that box. When we started putting these buttons on the cartoons, we saw that only about 20% of the cartoons from either liberal or conservative cartoonists can be classified as liberal or conservative. You know, they're about the weather and the crime and the celebrities and the lifestyle stuff and the teenagers and Facebook and stuff in the world that everybody agrees about. It's only 20% that was falling into that category. But the editors, particularly the conservative editors, they have in their mind that they want to run conservative cartoons. They want them to always be conservative cartoons. And I think we had a little bit of success with those buttons. We're still putting the buttons on there. Also, editors like to have in their mind this list of things, all the issues that you think you agree with as a conservative and all the issues you agree with as a liberal. And they don't like deviations from those lists. If you're a conservative, you have to agree to everything on this list. Liberal, everything on this list. So I think normal people pick and choose from the menus and have a kind of a mix of different things that they think. And I think most cartoonists tend not to be so doctrinaire as most columnists. It is a continuing annoyance to the editors to have a liberal cartoonist draw a conservative cartoon or vice versa. Sometimes I draw conservative cartoons. I'm kind of a libertarian liberal. And I get angry mail from the readers as well if I draw a conservative cartoon. People want to enforce those lists.
I saw something happen on MSNBC this week. I know what it was. Ed Schultz had somebody on the last day or two, and he just got so fed up with the person's point of view, probably talking about Indiana and the gay, the religious ordinance. And he cut off their microphone and tossed them off the show. And I just thought, see, that's the problem I have with that type of that type of medium, where it becomes this echo chamber. There's so little exchange of ideas anymore. I mean, when all we had was CNN, and you'd have left and right, and people would be going back and forth. They didn't have to agree. But now something like MSNBC, and I'm using this as a mirror for the cartoons, but something like MSNBC, they're only having, for the most part, guests who come on who agree with them to begin with, so there's no exchange of ideas, and sometimes we get that with the editorial pages and the editorial cartoons. You're not happy if your guy goes off the plantation for a while and has...
I think it tends to be something that the readers don't see. I get it online because people look at all of my cartoons, but... the typical reader is seeing what the editor selected for the newspaper. The editor probably subscribes to our service and another service, and he's probably getting 25 cartoons to choose from each day. And an assistant prints them all out and spreads them on the table, and the editor says, "Well, I like that one and that one." That's what you end up seeing. And the cartoonists are mindful of that competition every day to want to be on the page. That is... an incentive to draw what the editor wants. And what the editor wants is not the best cartoon. And very often you will see, like I talked about these Yahtzees, you know, you have a bunch of guys who tend to be 50, 60-year-old white guys who have the same cultural background, the same palette of cliches in their head to draw their cartoons with. They have to draw on the same topic every day because that's what they're talking about on Fox News and CNN. And you try to draw a cartoon that has as few words as possible and draws on those metaphors that, you know, the readers are going to like. You put it in that same 1.5 wide by 1 tall square. It's not unusual that there's a lot of duplication. It seems natural that people should come up with the same solution to that narrow problem with that narrow set of parameters. And that's a problem that editorial cartoonists have, because then the editor will say, well, you guys are so much alike. Well, we're alike because you guys are forcing us to be alike, because you have all of these parameters that squeeze us into this box. One thing I try to do with the package is that I know that we've got enough of what the editors are going to want in the package every day that I can feel free to throw in crazier stuff, stuff that's more provocative on the left and on the right, stuff that's visually different. I have what I call the McNally scale. You know, Jeff McNally, everybody loves him, the cartoonist in the 70s. Beautiful drawing style. Well, he's at the top end of the scale. The bottom end of the scale is a very minimalist, scritchy, scratchy kind of cartoonist drawing style. Well, editors like it up on the McNally end. They like it less on the scritchy, scratchy, different stylized end. And we certainly see that in the stats of what the editors choose to pick. But I want to throw different styles at them, even if those styles are difficult for them to digest. And so we do. And we have some artists who deviate from the McNally standard, and dramatically so. So if you can completely blame the editors, because they have plenty of choice to deviate from the narrow bit of stuff that they like.
So as narrow as the opportunities are, and probably will continue to be for editorial cartoonists, is there still a more of an opportunity for a conservative or a liberal voice coming in, like in it, as you project the next couple of years? Do you think that if a talented conservative cartoonist or a talented liberal cartoonist has a better career opportunity going forward?
I think the career opportunity is going to be much in the nature of journalists cobbling together a more creative mix of clients. You know, most cartoonists want to sit at home and just draw their cartoon, not have to worry about business, not have to worry about editors, just draw what they want to draw. And I think those days are kind of gone, and people are forced to be more entrepreneurial and pitch ideas and deal with doing different kinds of things now and in the future.
Daryl, when I first approached you about being a guest on the show, I innocently, I hope, asked about maybe doing kind of a sketching demo, and I think it's safe to say that you were not comfortable with that, because you see yourself more as the editorial than the cartoonist, or the writer than the cartoonist. At least that was my sense of it. Can you kind of explain that a little bit?
Well, sometimes cartoonists kind of brag about how fast they can draw things, but I draw kind of slowly. And I think if you brag about how fast and easy it is to do it, people value it less. Then editors ask for changes, and art directors ask for changes. And so I don't brag about drawing fast. In fact, I'll spend twice as long on a drawing to make it look like it was easy and I drew it faster.
Okay.
And I also noticed, people look at cartoonists like they're doing a little parlor trick, because some magic comes out of your hand, and that's nice. It's charming. But it's about ideas. You don't go to a columnist and say, well, it's amazing how you type. Look at how your fingers find all those little keys. It's just the right letter every time. Where did you learn to type like that?
So you don't want me to ask you what the cartoonists watching might want to know is what tools are in your toolbox? What do you like to use?
Oh, I'm sitting at my drawing table now. I draw with a 4H Statler Mars pencil, and I draw on drafting vellum. Here's the cartoon I was working on this afternoon that I haven't finished yet.
Okay.
Here's Obama and the Supreme Leader of Iraq, and they're negotiating. Their tongues are tied.
I like that.
I haven't finished drawing it yet, but that's what I do. Paper on pencil on paper.
And people would probably be surprised to see how big that actually is, the original.
14 by 17.
Well, I mean, people who don't know, they'd be like, wow, it's only this big in my newspaper. Why does he have to draw it that big?
Well, it shouldn't be that big in the newspaper. It should be bigger.
Right.
Some newspapers will run cartoons as illustrations with columns, and sometimes they'll do it a big section front. So we give it a nice high resolution, and it should look pretty.
Nice. All right. And so you are apparently still drawing on paper and vellum. You haven't gone the Wacom route?
I have a Wacom tablet just behind my computer screen where I'm talking to you, and I color the cartoons on there. I scan them in and color them. I could draw on the Wacom tablet, but I still like using a pencil. I like having original art.
Okay. And what about, as you've gotten more and more into this, were there editorial cartoonists that influenced you when you started, and have the influences changed as you've gotten more experienced and, shall we say, a little older?
Well, I started off as a kid collecting comic books, and I loved Mad Magazine, and Jack Davis was my hero, still is my hero. People accuse me of looking like Jack Davis, which I guess is a compliment. There are a bunch of great editorial cartoonists now. I think more great cartoonists now than ever before, and there's a wonderful breadth of style and voices now. People complain about editorial cartoons being the same, but that's just because they're looking at what the editors pick. There's wonderful variety of editorial cartoon styles. And one thing that I have done with my syndicate is that I have kind of chased after the guys that are my favorite cartoonists to get them to be in the syndicate. And so most of my favorite guys are already in my package.
Nice. When you come up with ideas, I mean, do you find that the ideas that work best are the ones that come to you quickly, or the ones that it takes time to develop?
I haven't really thought of it that way. I guess the cartoons that are most gratifying are the ones you draw when you're angry. I'll watch Fox News, and that'll make me angry. Sometimes I'll hear a turn of phrase from a pundit here or there, or read something in the newspaper, and that turns into a cartoon. I know lots of cartoonists are very structural about it, and they'll have these procedures, which typically involve doing lists. So a list of all of the issues of the day that I might draw about. Here's what I think about that. Here's a list of every other thing that comes out of my brain that is related to those issues. Let's draw lines and randomly connect these things and see if a cartoonist comes out, cartoon comes out of that. Let's try combining these two issues and putting them together in one cartoon. They're unrelated issues. Ha ha, that's funny in a cartoon. They're standard things you can do. When I worked for a newspaper and I had to draw a cartoon every day on deadline, I didn't have a lot of flexibility about the topic. My cartoons were not as good, but there's always something to draw. When I don't have to draw a cartoon every day, and I can draw only when I want to, something that inspires me to draw something, my cartoons are better.
Do you get ideas in your sleep, or does your subconscious separate out work from the rest?
Yeah, sometimes you're half asleep and you think of an idea, jot it down on a piece of paper. I have a notepad by the bed, maybe once every week or two.
Does it make sense in the morning?
Sometimes not.
That's I get that. What's the strangest inspiration you ever had for a cartoon?
Strangest inspiration? Oh. I don't have a ready answer for you on that.
Good. Good. Make you think a little bit.
I'll have to think about that for a while.
All right. How about this question? Any cartoons that you've drawn and put out there into the world that you wish you could take back? Anything that you've had second
thoughts
about? Oh,
yeah. You know, back in the run-up to war in Iraq, I was drawing pro-go-to-war cartoons, and I was taken in by the WMDs, and I read the New York Times and believed it. I regret being wrong. Every so often you draw a cartoon that people misinterpret, and the wrong people get angry and offended. You want to offend the people that you want to offend. When you offend the wrong people for the wrong reason, then I regret that, and I'll apologize. I don't get things right all the time. It happens.
Is there any sense in journalists beating themselves up over, believing in the WMDs at the time and believing that things were justified and we should have gone to war the way we did, and to not support the president at the time and not support the war effort? It was then thought of as very un-American that you would ever doubt that we had a good reason to go to war. Should we be beating ourselves up now that we didn't question authority in a greater way then, or was it just it just didn't happen?
I beat myself up now about that. I would feel better if I had opposed the drumbeats to war back then, and I didn't. Sometimes I goof too.
Have your own politics changed over the years? Have you evolved?
I'm pretty much where I was when I started this. This is a second career for me. I've been doing it seriously for about 15 years. I've been doing the syndicate for about 15 years. And before that, I worked for the Muppets, and I was a toy inventor, and I was very apolitical, and I was drawing other people's characters and other people's drawing styles. And, coming to being an editorial cartoonist is a joy. It's just an absolute joy. And a lot of people want to do it for that reason, because you get to say something. There are many opportunities to say something as a cartoonist. Most cartoonists are illustrators. And this is just, this is absolutely great. And I run the syndicate. I started the syndicate for the sole reason of letting myself do this. It's a scheme that allows me to be an editorial cartoonist in challenging times and not have a job and not be tied to depending on something that I might lose. I have been fired a couple times, a lot of people in this profession now. Now I'm fairly safe, which is nice.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to talk to you about something I mentioned in the introduction, and that is that you are looking for individuals and businesses to support Kegel.com. And it's not just that you're out there looking for people's money. There's a concrete reason that led to this. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, we do the syndicate, and the syndicate is modest, and it's kind of self-supporting. And then I also do Kegel.com, which is the site where people go to look at cartoons. And I put that up back in the 90s. It's really pretty old. I was one of the first spammers. I put up a teacher's guide to editorial cartoons for social studies teachers. Editorial cartoons are part of state-mandated testing in every state in 8th and 11th grade, and teachers teach the test, and they needed to see editorial cartoons for their teaching to the test. And so I spammed the teacher, so I said, come to our teacher's guide, and they did, and it was great. That got the attention of Michael Kinsley and Slate, and I partnered up with Slate, and that built the popularity of the site. Ended up with being partnered with MSNBC on Kegel.com, and MSNBC was purchased by Comcast, and Comcast came in and fired me and everybody else, so all my editors and their bosses all were gone, and so now it exists entirely as I support it. And what happened about 3 months, 2-3 months ago was, we had the Sony hack and North Korea getting crazy, and my cartoonist friends murdered in France. The world has changed, and there are a bunch of cartoon sites around the world that are suffering hacker attacks like we are. Cartooning sites in Europe and museum sites are getting pretty much the same kind of hacker treatment that started for us at that time. And it's orders of magnitude above anything that we've had before. Just huge distributed denial of service attacks that are continuing on us, and they evolve over time. And they've made Kegel.com rather expensive to host, because I have to pay for all these techie hours of them coming in and fixing things and making sure the site comes up when there's a new attack or a different attack, or they get through and they erase our hard drives, as they occasionally do. And it looks like it's an ongoing nature of the world kind of thing now. So we put up a crowdfunding thing on the site, and we've asked for people, you know, if you want to see editorial cartoons, you don't want to see the hackers win and take us down, help us out. This is what our reality is, and the reality is we're going to have this extra expense of being able to keep the site up and in the face of the detractors. You know, I can do the syndicate stuff and still draw for newspapers without Kegel.com. And we considered taking it down because, you know, the audience is smaller after our partnerships with MSNBC. But, you know, we've got wonderful dedicated fans, and we've had some people turn out, and we've gotten up a little bit above 40% of our goal for supporting the site. So, you know, I'm hopeful that it can, with the support of readers, be self-supporting and stay up. And anybody that would choose to give us a couple bucks a month, that would be wonderful, and we appreciate you.
And you can get in there for as little as a dollar a month, and you can go up as high as you can afford. So, you know, consider giving a few bucks.
It's a free site, and you don't have to give anything to look at it, and it's important to cartoonists around the world. And I'm not surprised that we're suffering from these attacks because, you know, if you're around the world, you think of American cartoons, this is where you would look to see American editorial cartoons. And, you know, our site is blocked in Iran. We know that evil despots look at our site to get mad at the cartoonists in their own backyard. There are plenty of people that could be the culprits that are doing this. You know, cartoonists are a light of freedom around the world, and I would like to hope that we have the support to keep this going.
Very good. Well, folks, listen, you can find Daryl Cagle's work in newspapers around the world, as we mentioned, and those of his syndicate, or you can subscribe at the source, darylcagle.com. Or Kegel.com, I guess, works also.
DarylKegel.com is my personal blog, and Kegel.com is the site where we aggregate cartoons from all the top cartoonists around the world who want to participate and be on Kegel.com. So it goes beyond my syndicate to lots of other guys around the world who want to be there, and cartoonists from other syndicates.
So where do you want to send people if they want to subscribe to your
daily? Go to Kegel.com, and there on the front page you'll see our little barometer of how much has come in, and click here to donate, and go there to look at all the cartoons. Be a fan. Subscribe to our daily email newsletter. That's free as well.
That's what I was getting at. All right. And again, folks, if you really love your editorial cartoons, Daryl would like to see you put your money where your eyeballs are. Help him raise cash to sustain Kegel.com, Kegle.com. Anywhere that you're watching or listening to Mr. Media, there's a link. You can just click on it and take it to you. It'll take you to it. You can become a supporter for as little as a dollar a month at kegel.com/heroes. Daryl, I know that you're on Facebook. Are you on Twitter as well, other social media?
Yeah, I do Twitter, and I do my blog at darylkegel.com.
Very good.
So much to see.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's a subject near and dear to my heart. I'm very interested. And thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
I appreciate it, Bob. Thanks. I do the biscuits, and I like this idea that everything is kind of cooked in pork.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank news and comment.
Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com, the George and Tony Entertainment Show. From the Realm Network.
This is Snake. Do you read me, Otacon?
Loud and clear, Snake.
Did you listen to the latest episode of the Gaming Marathon on the Realm Network?
Of course. They really know their stuff about gaming, especially that Usid guy.
Yeah, but that Chirac guy is a real jerk. I don't like him.
Regardless, their reviews are spot on and they tell it like it is.
That's for sure.
What happened, Snake? Were you spotted?
Nah, it's just Lowell Melser crying about the O's again.
Close call.
I better continue the search for Metal Gear, but keep listening to the Gaming Marathon each week.
You got it, Snake.
New every Monday afternoon right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network, and catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.